Hello, everybody. It's Marcy from WavesOfCommunication.com. The information I provide is designed to equip and empower parents and caregivers to take at least one conscious, focused, positive action today toward helping your child shift from nonverbal communication into unprompted spoken language. There's no time like now to make the necessary changes you need to see the success that you want for the late talker in your life. So let's get started.
I do have a topic that I want to get started and talk about while I'm waiting for some questions to come in. And it started from a mom who sent me a question over on my YouTube channel. She is a mom from Sweden. Her question was, how does this multilingual environment that children in, especially in European countries, are exposed to, how is that affected in late talking children? And it's a really excellent question because it really talks about how language is learned and how I am coaching parents and how what language facilitation is the way for parents to teach their children how to learn language naturally, just like we were all programmed to learn how to do. But in late talking children, something blocked that natural language learning. And so, what's happening is parents are trying to figure out what blocked their language learning and how to get their kids back into natural language learning again. That's the process of using language facilitation to help a child move from nonverbal communication to verbal communication. And when there are many languages involved in the process, it can muddy the waters for a child because the process, like I said, is they are shifting from nonverbal communication to verbal communication. And in a case of a multilingual environment, you have to decide which one of those languages are we going to teach the child to use first. So that's the main strategy about this is your child first has to relearn how to learn verbal speech. And they do that with one primary language first. You see, it's not unusual for children to learn multiple languages, especially when they're young. In these environments where children are moving from country to country often in these situations, or maybe their parents have worked for companies where they're moving around quite a bit and they're an expat family or a world schooling family and they decide to move to different places around the world to learn different experiences. All of those reasons are how children readily learn multiple languages. But that is true for children only after they are good at learning the primary verbal language that they learn, the one that their parents are speaking to them while the mom is pregnant, while the language that she's speaking, your home language, your mother tongue, the main primary language that you have. If your child is nonverbal and you're trying to get them to shift into verbal speech, you have to use that home language as your first language. It doesn't mean that your child can't learn multiple languages, and it doesn't mean that they won't be able to pick them up probably even quickly after they learn that first one primarily. And it also doesn't mean that they won't learn two languages spontaneously while you're facilitating one primarily. Because what happens in a child's brain and all of our brains when we're learning language is very complex. And what happens is kids start to learn language from their parents, their mother tongue, and when they start to get good at that and they learn, oh, this is how language goes, even while they're perfecting that first language, they can learn a second language. But until they're good at learning verbal speech from adults, learning one language at a time is a good idea. So if you have a bilingual household, I just started with a new family and they live in Japan. Mom is Japanese and only speaks Japanese, but at home speaks Japanese. Dad's Canadian from Canada and speaks English. So at home, this child's life, dad has been speaking English and mom has been speaking Japanese, which is very, very common in multilingual households. However, their little guy is a late talker because he suffered from ear fluid. And now that they're starting in my program, we're going to dial things back and facilitate only Japanese because it's the language he hears the most right now because they live in Japan and he goes to Japanese school and mom speaks Japanese. And mom is always also the primary language teacher for the first language, the one who spoke to the baby before they were even born. So whatever the mother, that's why they call it the mother tongue, whatever the mom's mother tongue is, that's the language you should be teaching your child first, because you're never going to stop speaking that language. And then even if you don't use it a lot, even if you live in another country, you'll never stop teaching it. And that's how your child will learn. And then exposure to other languages, once your child learns how to learn language from you, that'll work great. So that's how it goes. All right. Hi, Sugi. Thank you for joining me today. I'm looking to see if I've got any questions here. I was just talking briefly about multilingual households. I don't see any more questions. So if you do have a question for me, go ahead and post it right now in the comments of this video. I am answering questions about language facilitation, which is the process parents can use. In fact, it's only parents who this really, really works for, to help children move from nonverbal communication into the natural verbal speech that's inside of them. And the process I use, I call it language facilitation because it is really parents teaching their kids to get back to the kind of language learning that their brains are already wired for, that all humans are wired for. So Sugi has a question. Sugi's been following my page for a while and contributing in my group. Thank you so much for that. So glad that you're here today. And she says, my son is having echolalia. How can I help him? So Sugi, I did a video of, I think last week maybe, about echolalia. And the thing is, kids use echolalia or self-talk or repetitive talk when they don't know how to access words and use them naturally. So your child hasn't made the shift yet of using words for natural communication of their ideas. And how to use it in a structured language anyway. What they're doing is they're using those words that they're saying. That's what echolalia is. It's words that kids are saying as another nonverbal communication behavior. Even though it sounds like talking because it is actually words coming out of the child's mouth, it really does not represent what it means. It is a talking behavior that communicates a feeling, need, or desire. And so if what you have to do is, first of all, I recommend that you look at my YouTube channel for videos. You can look in the playlist for tips and strategies or the playlist that has information about the method. I've done a few because echolalia is a very, very common thing. And so if your child is doing a lot of this echolalic talking, which is just saying words that they have memorized to communicate something that doesn't necessarily mean what those words are. For example, a child might say, I want to go home whenever they don't like a video that they're watching, because at one time they were somewhere they didn't want to be and they heard that I want to go home. So they might say, I want to go home every time they want something to stop. So that's an example of an echolalia where a child heard something from a person or they learned a phrase. But other kids will start singing a song or repeat a rhyme when they're happy because it always makes them happy when they watch that rhyme on TV or YouTube. Or they'll start to use phrases that they heard in the voices of the characters that they see on TV. Those things are children's ways to non-verbally communicate their behaviors. And there are strategies about changing that into the words that those behaviors that our speech represent. And you need to do that first. But you also need to teach your child how to access those words, and that's by listening to you and not having any expectations of their talking. You can't prompt and pull speech out of a child and expect them to know how to access those words independently. So there is a whole process to go through. Whenever you have children who are using echolalia, you'll have to understand why is it that they're choosing to use that method of communication? What are they trying to communicate with those messages, and model the right words the right way at the right time for those things? So that's the how you handle the echolalia issue. Okay, so here's Maywish. Hey, Maywish, you've been following my page too. Says, my son says few words in English, but I was talking in Urdu when I was pregnant. When he turned two, we shifted to English. He sometimes understands Urdu too. So which language should I use? So Maywish, that's a great question. And even though you, I would say what you need to think about is how much do you speak each language every day? How much language is it natural for you as a mom to speak? If you're talking to not your son, but talking to anybody, if you're talking to your friends, if you're talking to your family, if you're talking to your spouse, all of those things. What language are you using the biggest percentage of your talking? That's the language that you should use. Not which one should I think about trying to change myself to use. Which one are you using right now? The one that you are using most is the one you want to try to use more. And then, because you won't ever stop using that other language. And if you shifted to talking English because you want your child to learn English, then you have to quit talking Urdu altogether and only speak English, and that's not going to be fun for you. And in order for it to work as a language facilitation strategy, it has to be fun and natural. So the answer to which language should I speak to my child if I'm going to teach them one language first is the language that mom speaks today the most of your 100% of your talking. If you're speaking 60% Urdu and 40% English, then you better be speaking Urdu more often. And that's the language you want to facilitate with your child. Now, I don't know if you're in my programs or not, but when you are facilitating language for kids who are nonverbal, there's ways to go about it using language facilitation talk, which is very simple. Your talking must be simple enough and slow enough for your child to hear and listen and focus on every word you say, because most late talkers process language a little bit more slowly than other people do. About 20% of the population do this. 20% of people walking on the planet process spoken language a little bit more slowly than other people. And late talkers are among those categories by 25% of people. So what you need to know is if your child's not good at listening to you, if your child doesn't look you in the face and listen to you every time you're talking, then that's what you have to facilitate first. Before you worry about what words are coming out, you need to get with your child and say the words that your child wants to hear. And then your child will look at you and listen to you. You can't say the words and model the words that you want to hear. You need to say the words that your child wants to hear. Those are the words that are about their experience, their feelings. That's all they care about. They don't care about those things that, you know, about exterior. That's what kids, it's all about them. It's all about their meeting their needs. That's why they say these single words, to say what they want. So that's the answer to that question. So, hey, Angela, thank you for joining me. And here's Soma has a question. Soma says, my son is 2.5. He was born prematurely, so he has some delays. All the other areas, he's progressing fine, but we are struggling with speech. He is screaming and frustrated when he's not able to communicate. Oh, that is a bummer. We are currently get speech therapy. Any suggestions what we can do to help him? So Sonia, there are lots of suggestions that you can do to help him. It's very common for kids who are premature to be late talking. In fact, that's again way up in the 20s of percentage of kids who are premature are late talking. Also multiples, kids who are twins are often naturally late talking. So the thing is, you have to figure out there's a process to helping kids make this shift from nonverbal speech to verbal speech. Most of the time in speech therapy, the object is to get the child to repeat and say words a lot of times, because theoretically, if they practice doing something like saying a word, that they'll learn how to do it, and it eventually they'll start doing it on their own without you having to model and prompt them into saying those words. That's the theory behind why speech therapists make children repeat words. And if a child will repeat a word when they're prompted or asked to do so, then the child will learn how to say it. They will. They do. That's what speech therapy does. Speech therapy teaches children to say words. That's the speech part of it. They teach children what words mean. This is a pen. This is your nose, like that. And then they get kids to say those words and make the association between the experiences of their life and language. And that's how therapists teach children to say words. Now, if your child is in that situation and you are doing the same, you are teaching your child to label things and say the name of things, then that is what your child will learn. Like I said, kids do learn to say words. But what you need to understand is that saying words to label objects is not the same as saying words that come from your heart to mean your ideas in your head. It's not the same. So speech therapy and repetition does teach children to say words. Language facilitation teaches children to pay attention to, focus on language that people are talking to them, especially their parents, understand and attach those things to the experiences they're having right now. I'm holding a pen. It's a pen. I write with a pen. I click with a pen. It's for writing. It's blue. It's a blue pen. So now I know all about this pen. Not just that it's called a pen, but why does it exist on the planet, and why is this important to me? This object, because if it's not important to me, I don't need to learn anything about it. But if it's important to me, then I want to learn about it. And so that's what therapy and that's what language facilitation does as a primary thing, is you have to teach your child the words and language for the things that they want to say. So you're modeling and facilitating the language that your children want to say. That's the motivation. They want to say the words. If you have to bribe or cajole or prompt or whatever, you can get the cookie when you say the cookie. If you've got to use some kind of reward to get your child to say the word, that's different than modeling the language that you use while you do those experiences. That's the difference between speech therapy and language facilitation. So, Sonia, What you need to do is you need to analyze what are you doing at home. Because however your child is getting speech therapy, 30 minutes a week, 60 minutes a week, 90 minutes a week, that speech therapist is teaching your child to label objects and say words. Play with toys, talk about the things that they're playing, you know, that. You as a parent are responsible to teach your child the language for everything else. While you're getting dressed, while you're eating, while you're driving in the car, when your child falls and skins their knee, when they want to eat something, when they're angry, when they're mad, all that stuff. You as parents, you have the responsibility to teach your children the language for all of that. Not only the responsibility, but the ability. You're the only ones that have the ability to do that. The speech therapist doesn't follow you around facilitating language while your child's having a nightmare in the middle of the night. Parents are. You're the ones there. You're the ones doing it. So you have to figure out, what are you doing? Are you speaking fast? Are you speaking a lot of languages? Are you expecting your child to say words before you've even taught them to say words? What are you doing as a parent to facilitate language? Because remember, your child is going to learn what you teach them, whatever you teach them. So that's what this is all about. That's what this is all about. Sugi says she's going to check my videos. Definitely check the videos, looking for those ukulele one. All right. Priya says, we are a multi-language household too. Whenever I talk to my son with speech delay, I say it once in my mother tongue and I repeat it in English as well. Would this help or hurt my son's development? Okay. So Priya, if your child is already fluent in one language, doing that kind of say it in English, say it in the other language, say it in English, say it in the other language while you're doing your experience is not going, I don't think either way. I don't think this is what I would recommend. This is not the way that I would recommend because it's not natural. Why should you, if you're in your everyday, let's say you're cooking with your child and you're, you know, making a little dish together or whatever, your child's helping you and you're going through this process, speaking in one language and then pausing and speaking in another language. And then you do another process and you model it in one language and you pause and you model it in another language. And then you move on to the next process. First of all, the process of the cooking, you know, you're talking about your child here. And if you're teaching them how to cook or, you know, do this kind of cooking fun experience with you, that's already one thing you're teaching them. Now you're trying to teach them to speak two languages on top of learning that other thing. And if your child is a late talker, that's too many things to be teaching all at once. It's not, and you're not going to get good at any one of those things. If you keep doing it over and over and over long time, your child's gonna do it, but your child's not gonna know how to have a fluent conversation in one language. Because if you were doing back and forth talking instead of, this is a pen, ein Bleistift, you know, or whatever. If it's, I just literally used three languages there. If you are stopping your natural flow of language, then your child can't learn the natural flow of language. And here's another reason that that's not a good idea. Because every language has its own rhythm and song. So English language sounds kind of like this song. Everybody talks in this sort of way when you are talking English. And when you ask a question, it kind of goes up at the end. Are you asking a question? And then in other languages, the cadence or song is different. So example, if I was speaking Spanish and I was saying, yo quiero uno, I don't know, like I can just try to shift back and forth and to speak back and forth in language, that's requiring my brain as a model to shift language to language. I'm not going to be able to concentrate on cooking a meal while my brain is trying to shift from language to language. So my language model, just like I tried to do for you, is going to be confuddled and I'm going to stumble over the words and I'm not going to do it right. Because unless I'm super fluent in both languages and both that child and that child is super fluent in both languages, that kind of flipping back and forth is just going to confuse the whole process. So what I recommend for families when they do, if you have a late talking child, is to teach one language until your child gets to the point where they are in that language consistently asking for what they want and telling you about things. I want a cookie, give me cookie. And they're doing things like saying, the kitty's soft, kitty soft. Cookie, me, I want cookie, that kind of stuff. If they're doing that in one language, then you can potentially have exposure to two languages. But if your child's nonverbal, you got to start with one. And then when your child gets to that limited verbal stage, then you can use two. But here's the rules in a multi-language household with kids who are talking. As a parent, you need to speak one language at a time for a period of time. And I usually say for a whole activity. So let's say you do want your child to learn two languages and you have a dual family household. One parent always speaking one language, other parent always speaking the other language is a good idea because that language is always going to be consistent with that parent. They're not going to be switching, flipping back and forth. And other parent is also going to be using their language consistently. So that's a good model. Also, if both parents speak both languages, then you speak one language together for a whole activity. Breakfast time, dinner time, meal time, you all speak the same language. And then for bath time, you all speak the other language. But everybody speaks the same language in the crowd, you know? And if one parent speaks one language and the other's parent speaks the other language, when you have a conversation, everybody has to speak the same language together because that's not fair to the third person. She's speaking English, he's speaking French. How am I going to know which language am I supposed to speak? So if you are in a community, that's what happens to any bilingual family. When you're with your Hindi friends, you speak Hindi. When you're with your English friends, you speak English. When you're with your Swedish friends, you speak Swedish. When you're with your mom, you speak your mother tongue. When you're with your husband, you speak another language. That's how it goes. Your communication partner, you have to match so that the person, your child, when you're facilitating language, they hear the cadence, the song, the back and forth and back and forth and back and forth of how that language goes. And every language is different, even Indian languages. Tamil's different than Hindi, even though I don't even know how they connect together. But even languages that have, you know, root from Greek or German or things like that, they sound similar, but the cadence is different, the phrases are different, the word order is different. It's different language, right? It's just kind of like teaching kids to convert from nonverbal communication. They take their hand to put it on the thing, or they drag it to the kitchen, or they bring you the stuff. To convert that to talking, you have to use talking and help the child convert both things back and forth. So that's how we do this. So Magwish says, thank you. You're welcome. How receptive language can improve? Here's another question from Magwish. How receptive language can improve to articulate language? I'm not really sure what I think you are saying by that. By the way, hi, Gladys. Thank you for joining me. So the process of talking requires first for us to have a clear understanding of what the language means, you know, what the words in the language mean and what the phrases mean and things like that, how to understand what the words mean, but also to understand how they go together to convey your own idea. So that's the difference between receptive language, understanding what the words mean, and when they go together, what they mean, because there's also the nonverbal parts of the language like that just matter for inflection, like, you know, don't go to the store now, or don't go to the store now, like maybe you'll go later, or now don't go to the store, or, you know, I don't know, when you mix things up and move things around, that's why language is complicated. That's why kids have to have a lot of exposure to hearing people use language in order to get good at using it themselves. So that's the other thing about the expressive part. So the receptive part is understanding what the words mean, how the words go together to make a message. And then you have to figure out, okay, so if I want to make my own message, I gotta remember what that word means and put it together with an idea that I'm forming in my head and spit it out somehow. And that process is very complicated. There's many, many steps that go on in a split second in a child's head. And you have to realize that it sometimes can take a little extra time for late talkers to put those things together. And so they have to be very, very, very good and have a very, very good understanding of what the words mean and how the words are used. And the way kids learn that is from watching and listening to people using the language over and over and over again. Examples, they see examples and models of this language. And they see how they respond and they understand, like I said, they understand it very clearly. So if your child's not watching you, looking at you when you're talking, listening, until you facilitate that, you won't have any verbal speech. You have to get, your child should be silently smiling and watching you in your face with their choice every time you talk before you can even start to expect them to say anything. So a nonverbal child who's not even looking at you when you talk to them, you've got a lot of work to do before you're able to get verbal speech with that child. That's, I guess, the answer to the question, how does receptive language move into receptive expressive language? That's kind of how that moves. All right, here's Sugi with another question that says, we are a bilingual family and my son could understand both language naturally, Tamil and English, naturally. And it may be because I used to talk with him in my own way as if he could understand, I'll say. And so it happened naturally, as you said, exactly. So it's very, very likely that your nonverbal child, if you do have a nonverbal child, Savi or Sugi or any of you, if you have a nonverbal child and you have a multilingual household, it's very possible and likely that your child does understand generally both languages, especially the things that you have said to them over and over and over again in that language. So for example, if you're speaking Tamil when you're tucking him in bed and when you're singing songs and learning rhymes and prayers and things like that, then he's going to remember those Tamil phrases and words, and he's going to remember the cadence of your voice and the sing-song and the rhythm and the song of Tamil. And then when you speak English with your Tamil accent, because that's what you do, because it's your second language and that's how everybody does, then your child will understand this is different. This sounds different. It's a different song. And the words sound different. And if you shift and you used to be saying and speaking in Tamil while you were, you know, cooking, and then your child heard all those Tamil words for stir and cut and apple and carrot and rice and all that stuff, and then you started speaking English, and your child starts to hear you use the English words for all those same things that you used to use in Tamil, there your child's going to be like, oh, she changed. Like, there's something different. There's another kind of language coming out. And if they're not used to it or they don't understand it, then they're not going to pay attention. It's just going to sound like blah, 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 blah. But if you make it a point and you say, look at me, this is pen. It's pen. Well, then your child is going to pay attention. They're going to learn that word for sure because you taught it to them. So that's what you have to think about if you're in a bilingual household, multilingual household. How did your child learn each of these languages? In Sugi's case, her child learned Tamil first. That's, he understood it, even though he wasn't talking. And then she started speaking English when he turned two, and he started to listen to English, and whatever she taught him, whatever words she taught him to say in English, he knows. But he doesn't understand English the same way he understands Tamil. not with his emotions, not with his, you know, all of that part of his language. That's the difference between what's going on. Hey, there's Lau. Lau's in my program, all the way from the Far East too. So I've got families in my program. Like I said, I had a new family who joined from Japan this past week. So glad to have you guys in my program. That makes 12 different countries of families that I'm working in. So this topic of multilingual households is not uncommon. And in fact, I just talked to a family right now. They're in India, but they are next month moving to Norway. Because a lot of families are expats. They work for contract jobs. They go to places for a year or a month or 2 months or whatever, moving house, picking up everything and moving to a new place. And now neither parent speaks Norwegian. They probably speak a lot of English in Norway and they know English, but in their household right now, they speak Tamil. Nope, they speak Hindi. They're a Hindi family. So we're in our language facilitation plan. We're going to have to work with what language are they going to be working with to, you know, do whatever. And my Japanese family, the family that lives in Japan, he's the one who speaks English and she speaks Japanese. And they're going to start by dialing back the English and working with the Japanese first. The thing is, every family is different. And if you are watching this video, if this is the first video you're watching, welcome. Thank you so much for joining me today. Please give this video a like. And by the way, if I helped you on this video, please share it with your friends on your timeline so that other people can have exposure and know that I do these live Q&A for parents for free every Thursday, 2 p.m. Eastern time on my Facebook page, because it is my mission to help you out there, all of you, as many of you as possible, understand how powerful you are as parents. You are way more powerful. For 30 years, I was a speech therapist. I worked in schools, hospitals, clinics, people's houses. And when I started training the parents and caregivers to be the language facilitators and backed off and not need me, that's when I realized that the whole process, people are going about it the wrong way. If we just empower parents to teach their kids to use the words that they want to say, who knows what those words are? Parents know. Speech therapists don't know. I don't know your child, you know? And even if I worked with you for 2 years, I still wouldn't be able to know your child's needs and wants and what's going on in their head the same way a parent does. You guys know that you can use your intuitive connection with your child. In fact, that's what I coach parents how to do, to help them want to use this talking. And the thing about talking, that's the easiest thing to teach kids, because every kid wants to do it. Every child, every late talker wants to use verbal speech. They want to. They just think that it's too hard because people are trying to get them to say words and they're prompting it and they're doing it the hard way. They're not doing it the easy way. And when you learn how to do it the easy way, easy, happy, safe, and fun, modeling the language that your children want to hear, they always start talking. They always do. However, and you must understand what you're doing to potentially hold up the process. Because like I said, as powerful as you are as parents, to be able to get your kids shifting out of these nonverbal communication patterns into the talking that you know is inside of them, you are also very powerful at keeping them stuck right where they are. I'm trying to be real. Because your kids are learning what you are teaching them. You are teaching them. They know everything they know because of your access, your exposure. If they learned what they learned from YouTube, it's because you put them in front of YouTube. If they learned what they learned from their friends at school, it's because you put them in front of those friends at school. They learn what they're exposed to learn. kids are smart. Most late talkers, especially kids like, you know, prematurity or ear infections, there's absolutely nothing wrong with the language learning parts of their brain, except for they're moving a little bit more slowly and they need more practice and training in how to work the right way. But when you teach kids to say words, like to label things, pictures or objects or people, instead of teaching them the natural working, that's kind of like going to learn to play piano by just playing the scales and never playing the song. Kids have to hear how language moves back and forth and move these things. So that's it. You have to figure out, May Wish, that's what she says, I'm right. You have to figure out your blockage. Everybody has it. Every child has the ability to learn natural language from their parents. Every child. It doesn't matter if your child has a chromosomal disorder or autism or ear infections or prematurity or CP or whatever. It doesn't matter. Human brains are wired to learn natural language from their parents.
Thanks, everybody, for tuning in today. I hope this content has inspired you to create your own positive language facilitation action plan for this week. If you enjoyed this broadcast, you're in luck. There are tons of resources across our Waves of Communication platform, all designed to help you teach your child to talk. My book, If It Isn't Fun, It Isn't Fun, available on Amazon, and my coaching programs, including a free 90-minute introductory class.